Hi, I'm Will Crowe, Executive Director of IDER, and this is...
Richard Crowe, Director of Engineering.
Yes, and thanks, everybody. How's everyone getting ready for that lunch break? You know it's coming, you can visualize that sandwich, or whatever you choose. But who knows what the catering's doing today? But hi, wanted to talk a little bit about some initiatives that are going on in industry, and also adoption growth curve is looking quite rosy for IDER. We want to talk about that, and also about some stuff that's recent developments that have not surfaced in the news or have been talked about, but are worthy of your time and attention today. Hopefully, we'll create just a little extra special sauce as to why you chose this over other great panels. Hey, Tom.
Hi.
We're going to call on you.
Yes.
I'm still in trouble anymore. So, advanced supply chain. Three different initiatives last year, what I call the trifecta of initiatives, kind of came to the fore. One was already rolling with a lot of you who are very familiar with EMA Avails. The unique ID there for digital retail is the IDER ID. But also then IMF for broadcast, our friends over across the pond, the DPP, promulgating the SMPTE standard for taking IMF and moving them to the broadcast world. That was announced there at IBC, for those of you who were over there last September. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the use cases starting to emerge out of that. In flight, you may not have seen, but that is emergent, and we're delighted to see that starting to percolate. And Taxi Complete, Trackable Asset Cross-Platform Identifier, that is the initiative from the Coalition for Innovative Media Measurement, CIM. I'll roll with that acronym going forward, but that's it. I'll see the initiative around SMPTE's open binding ID to time-level contents, the standard there. And our contributions, IDER's contributions to the industry and to SMPTE standards from our video service ID. Next slide. But first, about form. So I was meeting with a major premium television network here in LA yesterday and had a chance to chat with them about their current struggles in trying to get IDs as early as possible, close to what we call IDER inception. That is ultimately, I think, one of our goals. We're not embarrassed to admit we'd love to see these things instantiated as early in the life cycle of a title. And so that even at the title level, that folks can track things very early in the life of new work. But the metaphor here is the idea that every 2 to 4 years, or 2 years, the International Olympic Committee goes to Greece, and they have a parabolic mirror that takes a beam of sunlight, and it lights the Olympic torch. We all know what the Olympic torch is. We all know the notion that someone is going to then start running from somewhere in Greece. Maybe it's Mount Olympus, maybe it's Athens, I'm not sure, but to know that that sunlit torch is then carried to the site of the next Olympic Games. And you've got dozens and dozens of runners who are traversing mile after mile in this torch supply chain. Sorry, I had to go there. And they will not be at the opening ceremonies. They will not see physically, they will not personally see the lighting ceremony, but they are integral to the process of bringing fire from Mount Olympus to the Olympic Games when they do the torch lighting ceremony. So in talking with this network yesterday, I was like, it's kind of like the Olympic torch. They're like, okay, yeah, go with that. Sure, I guess. But there's more of a sense of, yes, it is something that many different stakeholders will have a role in playing, the different actors in the process. They may not see the final destination of that, but that network effect, we're going to talk again about network effect, will be a recurring theme here, of having all the different folks working all along the path to bring that torch, our unique identifier, all the way out through the distribution endpoint, the lighting ceremony, there is the big stadium with all the crowds cheering. That is where we want it to be, is that sense of like, carry it through. Cargo, transport, payload, what call you what you will, it has to make its way from top to bottom. Next slide. So where we sit. Richard, I want to let you take a quick second to talk a bit about IDER's central location. And the bottom caption here, open, persistent, globally unique IDs, the glue, the connective tissue, that is where we like to see ourselves.
Well, earlier people were talking about automation, AI, and so on. And we have a running theme within IDER that you can't apply automation, you can't apply AI unless you first identify it. You need to know what it is you're dealing with before you can do anything with it. And so you can see sort of the IDER's this little octopus or spider at the center of the universe connecting all these things together, allowing you to have automations, allowing you to do things more efficiently, to apply new technologies. because you can uniquely and reliably identify the content you're passing, what you're dealing with. And so you've got the DBP that we'll be talking about, using IDER IDs and their MXF materials. IDER is part of the MXF standard where we have best practice with the MXF user group. IMF user group.
Thank you.
All the different metadata standards, you've got EBU core, you've got Movie Lab's common metadata, there's also the media manifest for delivery of content. And all of these different areas have an opportunity for identification. And IDER IDs can be carried in all these different standards, all these different technologies, all different places, so that you can pass the torch on. Because each stage of the process itself may not be benefiting directly from the IDER identification, but the upstream and downstream people do. And so you need all the paths to carry the ID so that everyone collectively benefits. And this is also a situation where having unique persistent identification across your assets is not a single company's competitive advantage. It's the industry's competitive advantage. It benefits you and your competitors who are also participating. And so that's why all these things, standards come together, is because it's a collective benefit of the industry to standardize on these things and to have a unique and persistent way of identifying everything in the supply chain.
And I'll take case in point. So the Nordic Entertainment Group, NENT, based out of Stockholm, they are an IDER member. They're the first company we've had, we talked about this at the annual conference in January, that has put IDER IDs into linear broadcast EPG guided metadata. So here in the States, you know, there are some big incumbents, I won't name names, but they have lion's market share with regards to EPG guide metadata delivery of unique IDs. But over in Sweden, within the Nordics, NENT is not only doing this for their linear television, they're also asking their competitors. They're also asking other companies in Norway and in Denmark and other places to do this as well, so that the collective tide rises all floats all boats. Next slide. So today, a world we live today where the negative network effect is still in play. You see all the different friction points of the ID matching process. If it was licensor and licensee, and that's all we dealt with. If it was just like these two parties in the middle, having a great time, talking back and forth, it would be easy, but it's not that world. We never lived in that, haven't been in that world ever. So the notion of in television especially, there's all these different actors and players in the ecosystem who need to get it right, to get the version of what they're talking about correct from the start. Next slide. So IMF Broadcast, Richard.
Right. So IMF has been out around for many years and was originally promoted for ultimately digital retail environment. But in the UK, the Digital Production Partnership, in conjunction with ABBA from North American Broadcasters Association, applied IMF to broadcast, extending IMF to also have protocols for ProRes content delivery with IDER identification in the mix, so that soon it will be a requirement that when you want to deliver content for broadcast in the UK, you deliver it this way. The current DPP standard is in play, the IMF version will be coming out soon to be standardized. So that way, all of their broadcasters are receiving consistent content in a consistent way, consistent delivery. Within that package, it can be delivered to their specification. But it allows tremendous automation and tracking opportunities within these organizations. And so it's to their benefit to do this. They're making this available and promoting it in other areas as well. The same work was intended to be used for online distribution, just like for broadcast distribution.
Can I tell a little bit about some of the value prop here? Because that's also component-based video delivery. It's cost savings on the delivery side. It's also cost savings on storage, because you're not pitching the same asset with localized titles and language multiple times. You're just sending out to the components that have changed. The components that are unique for different areas and regions can be injected separate of the master file.
Correct. You can do corrected delivery, or you need to correct a particular video, audio, or a time text track. You can deliver just the corrected track and have it sampled everything that's already been delivered. Or multi-localization delivery, where you deliver one video stream, which can be synchronized with any number of different tracks. And of course, Europe, that is a very big issue of being able to manage multiple localizations.
Next.
And all this, of course, now has been standardized and synced. And this is just sort of an example of how the whole thing flows for the DPP and IMF. And off to the side, is an example of embedding the EIDR ID in the metadata payload that goes along with the IAM file, so you have clearly identified all the content you're carrying. And in the best practice we've recommended, we suggest, because it's standardizing its structure, but there is not a rigid standard in how you apply the standard. But we suggest you include at least the ID, the assets abstraction ID, and the particular edit ID. So you have those two things available without having to do a resolution to look them up. And then optionally, the manifestation ID of the actual file or digital asset you're delivering. And so having those available then allow you to tie that in with all your other applications inside. And you can start doing some downstream integrations of tying the content to the key art, to the descriptive information, to the scheduling information, so that you can do more lights out operations beyond just the content perception. So having all this lined up stuff isn't just about delivering content. It's also about all sorts of other automation opportunities within the asset. Within
the workflow. That's you're going to value yourself too. Yes.
Sorry, I have questions. I apologize. But I'm looking at this and I know the IR structure. I know the IR structure. What I'm trying to understand is if I have an IMF that has multiple assets that are versioned, language, picture, what have you, where in the IR process does that go? Like, what would I see if I logged into IR?
So in IMF itself, it's usually wrapped around a common timeline.
Right.
So the idea is that everything's going to sync to the same video timeline. And in IR, that translates to an edit.
Right.
So everything that could possibly go in this IMF will all have the same edit ID. Now, underneath that, in IR, you can have a manifestation that is described with all of its tracks. You can also identify individual tracks. So you can actually have a free-floating subtitle track that is underneath an edit, saying this subtitle track syncs to this edit. And so you can have the individual tracks identified with IR IDs, the collective set of the tracks identified with IR IDs, or we're simply saying these are all going to sync with this IR ID. And so as long as I know that this time text track or this audio track will sync with this ID, I know I can play with this IMF.
So you mentioned both broadcast and online, supply chains that IMF for broadcast is approaching, and also still, digital cinema is part of the roots of IMF, and we've been talking with some companies over in Europe about digital cinema recently in major countries in the center of Europe. and also then to push it into in-flight entertainment, where there's a lot of versioning. You've got your 7 to 10 different languages on that plane on the seat back in front of you. As you look at that and you choose your language to watch that film, ultimately you want to make sure that the providers on the back end are trying to reduce cost by driving automation into the system for the delivery of the assets.
And in-flight has a particular versioning issue that's a nightmare. That you may be flying a 20-year-old airplane and it still has the same media system that dinner was built. And so when you have to deliver content for in-flight entertainment, it's like you have to deliver everything on everything from NTSC and VHS and beta up to, maybe there's somebody still screening 8mm projector.
Hopefully they're file based.
Or 16.
As opposed to tape based.
But at some point you have to deliver all of these things. You have to render these things all out. This is your whole delivery nightmare. And being able to do any level of automation and improvement and automating your testing process, automating your delivery process, this all comes into play in efficient and accurate delivery, because God forbid you deliver the uncut version of an R-rated movie to United Arab Emirates.
Indeed. Next up, Taxi Complete. We talked about it before, the Obit standard. This was announced last July that the effort will be moving on to try to provide an audio watermark. Kantar is the company that was chosen. Their audio watermark was chosen for the practical example, the technical implementation of embedding EIDR IDs into linear broadcast content or on-demand content, and also the ad ID was chosen for the ads in the ad breaks. And the two components are of OBID, Open Binding IDs, are the standard AST 2112 and then the time mode. So you need to know in that world, what time it was aired, what channel it was aired on, that timestamp is super, super crucial for audience measurement and attribution. And that's the quantitative world we want to see things moving into, where you're able to measure audiences in a de-identified or anonymous way with great specificity and be able to bring that data back to our return path. Oh, by the way, on the last slide, we, IRE, contributed the video service ID to the SMPTE standard when they were saying we need a standard for all of the different platforms and networks and channels that we can put into a database of who's playing out the content, and then we were able to say, hey, we've got one, great, let's use ours, and so they brought that into the mix. Some of the folks behind it, no slouch here, a lot of names you're very familiar with, a lot of companies who are very invested in seeing some evolution in the space and the industry. Richard?
Yeah, so one of the key features of the OBIT watermarks is they can be layered. You can have more than one in a single piece of content. So for a particular show, this example here, the producer, when they first produced the show, could embed the IRE ID for the abstraction of that work directly in the show. They deliver it out. A distributor makes a cut of that show for their purposes. They put the edit ID onto the work. The production ID, the abstraction is still there. Then when it gets to the broadcaster digital retailer, they put on their ID for the particular encoding, the particular bit stream, bit rate, whatever they're delivering, plus the ID of their service. So all those IDs are sitting in the same piece of content. They can all be extracted at playout, either by a direct device connection or acoustically. And the acoustic one is literally the TV's playing and someone sitting across the room, I think it's back to the test with an iPhone, listening to the thing and then picking up the watermarks.
No, it was an Android device.
It's our Android. And this was recently tested in the ATSC 3.0 test in Phoenix, the successful detection by an audio device. So that it's been tested in various labs. We know that it works. We're verifying it.
Yeah, the Fox Lab here in LA. It's still early days, folks. It's still, but we feel that that both the acoustic is important for both viewing out of home, bars and restaurants. They're going to want to measure audience or viewership in those environments. Device based, I think, is where the scale really starts to kick in, and that's something we're watching closely this year to see some trials around device.
Yeah, the particular watermark is years old, so the watermark itself is well tested, well proven.
Yep.
This particular application is new.
I would call attention to two things here. There's a lot of different potential ways in which you could use this watermark in television and online distribution of what ostensibly is what we still think of as television content. But the center of standardized tracking assets across platforms, that's key to the remit of the taxi initiative. And then the top left corner quadrant, increased speed transparency on advertising measurement, quantitative measurement.
My favorite dystopian example is, since it's an audio watermark, in-home app automation device, Alexa, whatever, will be able to tell everything you're watching, on what device or channel you're watching it, and be able to aggregate that data with the show information to know what the show was and other information for cross-sell, up-sell, recommendation purposes, so that the sort of the ultimate recommendation engines can be enabled without having platform-specific recommendations. Because right now, you can't get, Amazon can't cross-sell you something based on what you're watching on Netflix. But it is possible to do with the
platform. We didn't go into that was a good thing. But the sense of caveat that was saying there are business rules around measurement that are still being evolved by the industry. So with Richard's dystopian the scenario there, I think is still a long ways from, it's not automatic, it's not assumed that is the denouement of this whole thing. So the notion that, look, ultimately, it's about measuring more effectively, measuring greater data sets, viewership, and also getting smart about the competitive landscape.
And more accurately. Because right now, one problem with current measurement schemes is they're based initially on schedule information. So the first measurement stats you get are based on what was scheduled to be presented.
As opposed to the as-run logs.
Which comes much later. This allows you to get actual presentation real-time with viewing. so you know what's actually being watched. You don't have to wait later for an updated report.
Even near real time would be better than what the world we live in today for measurement. Next up, EMA avails. Folks here are very familiar with the EMA avails process, the 1.7 and 2.2 standards. Just getting folks to agree upon what feels like we're talking about has been a multi-year process. Starting with a simple Excel spreadsheet that has predefined columns and headers and rows. But that process has just caught fire, and people are now understanding it's far more valuable for all of us to be talking about the same data, the metadata we want to be distributing, than it is for us all to singing different songs. So in transactional video on demand, supply chain, one major digital retailer reporting 93% of movies arrived with Eider. We were 100% coverage. We were proud to say that at the annual meeting that of the top six studios, only one studio does not have 100% coverage, and they're going to close the gap this year. There was a testimonial there to that effect in January. With reducing the time spent, 42% on manual tasks and on cycle time, those are all key KPIs that are going to hopefully make people say, look, this is the time to adopt and to embrace.
Yeah, this is both a function of cost reduction, but also time to market. Because not only are they reducing their costs, but they're getting the content online faster and making more sales because they deliver it.
And reporting the data back to the rights holders faster too. So, everyone talks about universal search. We see Eider as that connective tissue, that glue to be an enabler of universal search. There are companies that are taking a very strong look at Eider right now as the unique ID in their universal search apps. For the on the iPhone side, there's a TV app for universal search. Will show it's on Netflix, it's on Amazon Prime, it's on Hulu, it's on your cable provider, your satellite provider through a federated search functionality. That federated universal search is something that we think Eider is perfectly suited for. And moving into reporting, the royalties and residuals use cases, we're talking with a major broadcast network in New York City right now about a TVOD or what they call it download to own, but we call it transactional VOD. There's a semantic difference there around rights and royalties and residuals. So that's to be able to report that data back by keying off of the Eider ID in the all parties working to pivot off of that. Content acquisition optimization, yeah. And I don't need to read everything here, but essentially you can see where this is trending. So the who's who, this is as of July, snapshot of last July of 18. This was at the slide presented from the Digital Supply Chain Alliance meeting at the Lowe's Hotel in July last year, so that you saw DEG, EMA, and Movie Labs all present there to get a report card. That's a report card that was given and continued to be updated through the DSCA on its maturity state and the readiness level of all these companies and all these retailers. And I expect this list will grow over time. Hopefully, some of you will help it grow. So adoption, milestones, Richard, take it.
Alrighty, so we're very proud of the fact that Eider is continuing to grow, continuing to be embraced by the industry. We had two key milestones recently. One was the registration of our 2 millionth record, which happened in December, and it was an Indian film called Gully Boy. And then...
Tesh knows that film.
It's an awesome film. I recommend it.
So there you go. Watch it today. And then our 4 millionth alternate ID was added, because not only does Eider issue its own identifiers, but we track other people's identifiers related to those same objects. And we have assets in the registry that have more than 50 alternate IDs. And we have our 4 millionth, which was an Internet Video Archive, IVA, ID for the French film I'm not going to pronounce.
Our friend Francois, our business development guy, he nails it every time, but I am not going to try to my clumsy French. We're a commonwealth, folks, of unique IDs and alternate IDs, right? So that sense that the contribution to an open standard, a persistent ID registry that is collectively building this rich, linked, structured, curated database of IDs is super valuable to everyone. It's just something that we continue to have to socialize it broadly with everyone to understand that being part of the Eider ecosystem, being part of the Eider community is more valuable than standing on the sides and watching it. and not participating. So ultimately, you know, growth on the registry, the way in which the API is used, the amount of countries you see, the heat map here of different regions around the world. I think we did get a web UI lookup from North Korea, yes?
Yes, we have actually been asked
to North Korea. as Trump said there. But ultimately, quick digression. But ultimately, this is all trends are moving upward here. So, next slide. It's a virtuous cycle. Yeah, pure and simple. You know, it's a world where, you know, studios and networks are awake. They're waking up to the idea that working with an open global standard is far more effective than to continue to just pay single proprietary vendors in the world infinitum, right? On and on and on. How do you then shift and pivot a world toward open IDs? Because we deliberately don't describe all the metadata about a program. We let other companies run businesses on rich key art and captions and, you know, the cast and crew and all the deep additional supplemental metadata around a title. We have just enough to identify what it is specifically. So in this virtuous cycle, we see EIDR sitting in a great place. With all the cooperations and partnerships we have today, the vision is that this drives value year over year, and it's only growing incrementally. So back to our little guy running somewhere from Greece to Korea or to Beijing for the next Winter Olympics. He was on a boat going across the ocean to Brazil, maybe, London. Every player has a role in that process. It's not eminently obvious to any one person in the middle of the chain, but that network effect cannot be realized without that connected tissue and that sense of shared obligation to raise the boats for everybody. Any questions?
We're holding it for a moment.
That's it. Yeah, you've got a point there. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your time today.